Well, trust the God of miracles. We're going to read about one of those miracles before very long, and it's kind of a real big one. But before that, I just want to go through our New Testament walk through the Bible hand signs. So I'm sure you're getting to know these hand signs by now. So join with me and everybody else, and we do Greece, language, Israel, hopes, Rome, roads, birth, baptized by John, tempted by Satan, second birth, woman at the well, rejection, selection, parables, miracles. I've lost my place. Testimony of Peter, transfiguration, counting the cost, seeking the lost. And today, Lazarus raised. Well done. Good stuff. So I can ask Logan, please, if he could come and do our first reading, which is John chapter 11, verses 1 to 15. John 11, 1 to 15. And this is all the account of Lazarus. Thank you.
A man named Lazarus was sick. He was from Bethany, the village where Mary and her sister Martha lived. Mary would later pour perfume on the Lord. She would also wipe Jesus' feet with her hair. It was her brother Lazarus, who was sick in bed. So the sisters sent a message to Jesus. Lord, they told him, the one you love is sick. When Jesus heard this, he said, this sickness will not end in death. No, it is for God's glory. God's Son will receive glory because of it. Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So after he heard Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 more days. And then he said to his disciples, let us go back to Judea. But Rabbi then said, a short time ago, the Jews tried to kill you with the stones. Are you still going back? Jesus answered. Aren't there 12 hours of daylight? Anyone who walks during the hours won't trip and fall. They can see because of the world's light. But when they walk at night, they trip and fall. They have no light. After he said this, Jesus went on speaking to them. Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, he said, but I am going there to wake him up. His disciples replied, Lord, if he is sleeping, he will get better. Jesus had been speaking about the death of Lazarus, but his disciples thought he meant natural sleep. So then he told them plainly, Lazarus is dead. For your benefit, I am glad I was not there. Now you will believe, but let us go to him.
Thank you, Logan. So, in the account of Lazarus, what struck me first of all was that Jesus heard he was ill, but he stayed where he was for 2 more days before travelling to see him. And when he got to the house, he was told he was too late. Lazarus has already died a few days ago. Now, to the casual observer, it may seem that Jesus made a mistake waiting those 2 days before visiting Lazarus. But I believe Jesus had a bigger purpose than just simply healing Lazarus. A healed Lazarus would have been a wonderful and truly miraculous thing to do because he was gravely ill. But Jesus had something else in mind. He was going to raise him from death to life. Defeating death would show that Jesus was more than merely human. Humans can make a living person dead, but they can't make a dead one alive. Only God can do that. And so this sort of got me thinking a little bit about time and how we use our time. And that first verse from Psalm 90 seemed relevant for this. And King Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, there's a time for everything under heaven. And there's 8 verses of a time to do this and a time to do that. Time is an interesting feature of life, isn't it, that we experience, and often we're saying, oh, I haven't got time for that. But actually what we're meaning is that we're prioritizing something else over that one thing. Because we've all got 24 hours in a day, unless we go traveling around the world, of course, and then we gain a few or lose a few, which does confuse us somewhat, certainly myself. But we've all got 24 hours in a day, and I like to use a big chunk of that for sleep. I mean, just imagine what I'd look like if I didn't get my beauty sleep. No need to answer that question, but it's but we have to think, how are we going to use our time? This job that we've put off, you know, will it ever get done? Or is it an ambitious pipe dream, you know? But King Solomon said there is a time for everything under heaven. Did he have more than 24 hours a day? No, he didn't. He had plenty of slaves, I guess. But he had to order his time the same as we do. And there's a couple of verses in the New Testament, in Ephesians 5, we begin with. Should we just say this together? So be careful how you live. Don't live like fools, but live like those who are wise. Make the most of every opportunity in these evil days. And so we're making the most of every opportunity. When opportunities come our way or we see them somewhere, Paul is saying we need to make the most of them. Be careful how we live. Not like fools, but like people who are wise. If we move on, Colossians 4, verse 5. Should we just say this one? Live wisely among those who are not believers, and make the most of every opportunity. So once again, living wisely, making the most of these opportunities. People are noticing how we live. And so we need to be careful. You know, if we say we're going to do something, we need to follow through and do that thing. If we say, suddenly realize that we're not going to manage it for whatever reason, you know, we need to apologize. Say, you know, I wanted to do it. I was sure I could do it, but it looks like I can't. So we apologize before we get complained at for not doing it. So let's take care how we use our time. Jesus obviously had a big advantage over us in that he knew the beginning from the end, of course. So he knew how to order his time a little bit better than we do. But that first hymn we said, you know, God knows and we trust him when we follow his ways. So let's take care how we use our time. Our next hymn tells us a little about God's working out his purposes as year succeeds to year. God has a purpose. He's not just running along in this world and following whatever happens. You know, God is working his purposes out. So shall we stand and sing? I have 189. Okay, so I'd like us to move to the communion part of our service now. And we have a short reading, so I wondered if somebody could read it for us, please. Aaron, you up for this?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Matthew 26, verse 26 to 29. As they were eating, Jesus took some bread and blessed it. Then he broke it in pieces and gave it to the disciples, saying, "Take this and eat it, for this is my body." And he took a cup of wine and gave thanks to God for it. He gave it to them and said, "Each of you drink from it, for this is my blood, which confirms the covenant between God and his people. It is poured out as a sacrifice to forgive the sins of many. Mark my words, I will not drink wine again until the day I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom."
Thank you, Aaron. And so we see from this reading, and we know that this is God's time to bring about the fulfillment of all the Old Testament prophecies, all the Old Testament sacrificial system, and for Jesus to be the ultimate sacrifice to bring us forgiveness for our sins. And you know, God puts various things in place. You know, our walk through the Bible signs, Greek language, he put in a common language so that people could spread that word easily. The Rome roads, they built the roads so people could go out literally and visit people, take the message. And he gave Israel hope to look forward to the coming of the Messiah. And so God was working in time, and this particular time, 2,000 years ago, to bring about the most important event in human history. That is Jesus dying on the cross, taking our punishment on himself as if he were the guilty one. And we remember that in the bread and the wine, don't we? This body and blood broken and shed for us. But Jesus came back to life. God raised him from the dead to prove that God's plan of saving us, he was the first to be raised from the dead. And Jesus' sacrifice on our behalf was powerful enough all those 2,000 years ago. It's still good enough for us today. And all we need to do is to benefit from Jesus' sacrifice, is to acknowledge that we need him. We can't do this on our own. We need a change of heart. We need Jesus to wipe us clean. And our old memory verse from Isaiah reflects that. Should we just say this together? Come now and let us reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Isaiah 1 verse 18. And so if we believe these things and ask God to forgive us, then we can share in the bread and the wine and give thanks to God for his wondrous gift to us. But if we're still unsure whether we believe or not, and we can just let the bread and wine pass by, and but be free to talk about it afterwards with myself or others here that you know. Okay, so I'd like to ask Isla to come now and do our second reading about Lazarus. John chapter 11, verses 17 to 26. Thank you.
When Jesus arrived at Bethany, he was told that Lazarus had already been in his grave for 4 days. Bethany was only a few miles down the road from Jerusalem, and many of the people had come to console Martha and Mary in their loss. When Martha got word that Jesus was coming, she went to meet him, but Mary stayed in the house. Martha said to Jesus, "Lord, if only you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus told her, "Your brother will rise again." "Yes," Martha said, "he will rise when everyone else rises at the last day." Jesus told her, "I am the resurrection and the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying. Everyone who believes in me, lives in me and believes in me will never, ever die. Do you believe this, Martha?"
Thank you, Isla. Contents of your Bible. Okay, so we see here that Jesus is comforting Martha. And Jesus had arrived in Bethany and was told that Lazarus had been dead for 4 days. That's a long time in a hot climate. But he saw Martha and she said to him the kind of obvious thing that we perhaps all would say, "If only you were here earlier, my brother would not have died." But she goes on, "But I still believe that God will do whatever you ask." Martha's faith in Jesus is still rock solid despite her grief. She still knew that Jesus could be depended upon, even in the death of her brother. Jesus says to her, "You know, your brother will rise again." Martha knows her theology and she displays her faith once more. She said, "Yeah, I know he will rise again on the last day, you know, like all those who believe will." And she knew that Lazarus would have spiritual life after death, but she could not have guessed that Lazarus was going to have more life on this earth, more physical life here. And the next words of Jesus are very familiar to us because they're often quoted at funerals and they are one of our memory verses. Should we just say this together? Jesus said, "I am the resurrection and the life. Those who believe in me will live, even though they die." John 11:25. And so Jesus here is saying that he has power over death. You know, this is not just a nice little thing to quote. He has the power to do this. And as I was thinking about that, I remember the line in the film, The Chariots of Fire, and there, you know, Eric Liddell has got to a point where he knows he can't run this race because it's on a Sunday, and he's told the committee, and they're discussing all this, and somebody kind of says, well, can't they change these rules that we can make Eric Liddell run on a different day? And one old guy pipes up, that's a matter for the committee. And somebody else says, yes, but we are the committee. We have this power. We can do this if we want to. You know, well, it reminded me of Jesus. Jesus has the power to raise Lazarus up again, should he want to. And indeed, he does use that power. And he's telling us because he is the resurrection and the life. You know, life and resurrection, they both go together. Jesus is those things. And so that's wonderful, isn't it? That's a wonderful line. Jesus is the light and resurrection. I am the resurrection and the life. But those last few words are a real challenge. He says, do you believe this, Martha? Do you believe this? And he says her name, Martha. You're sad, you're crying. Do you believe, though, that I have this power? And this is a key in our relationship with God. You know, it's not about church attendance. It's not about theological knowledge or friends in high places. Do I believe all that Jesus came to do? Do I believe this? Do I believe that Jesus is God? Do I believe that he is the resurrection and the life? And wonderfully, Martha's answer was, yes, Lord, I believe. It comes in the next little bit there. Yes, she says. And that's the challenge for us. Do we say the same thing? Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the resurrection and the life. You have this power over death. This thing that we cannot attain ourselves, but you can. Okay, so Aston, can you come and do our next reading, please? We're moving on verses 32 to 44, Luke 11 still. Thank you.
Now when Mary came to where Jesus was and saw him, she fell at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you have been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who had come with her also weeping, he was deeply moved and his spirit and greatly troubled. And he said, where have you laid him? And they said to him, Lord, come and see. Jesus wept. So the Jews said, see how he loved him. But some of them said, could not he have opened his eyes of the blind? Could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man also have kept this man from dying? Then Jesus, deeply moved again, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of the dead man, said to him, Lord, by this time there will be an odour, for he has been dead for days. Jesus said to her, did I not tell you that if you believe, you would see the glory of God? So they took away the stone, and Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. Jesus, I know that you always hear me, but I said this on account of the people standing around, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. The man who had died came out, his hands and feet bound with linen strips and his face wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, unbind him and let him go.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a little technical fault there, I'm afraid. So Jesus now meets with Mary. You know, he's been talking to Martha, and now Mary comes along, and we hear a similar statement to that of Martha's. Lord, if you'd been here earlier, my brother wouldn't have died. And so you can imagine these two ladies talking earlier a day or two ago, you know, if only Jesus was here, but he's not, you know, this wouldn't have happened, and they would have been agonizing these things. And we can always say, if only all sorts of things. But remember, if we go back to verse 4, we see there that Jesus had a purpose in not showing up early. Timing is everything. And so Jesus sees Mary's tears and the others, but he felt a deep anger rising up within him and he was deeply troubled. Now, I don't really know the exact reason why Jesus was angry and deeply troubled, but it could possibly have been one or several of these things. Perhaps he was simply empathizing with everybody's grief that he was seeing in front of him. Or perhaps he was troubled by their unbelief and their lack of faith, various ones. Perhaps he's troubled by death's destructive grip on humanity. You know, he's seeing this lived out here while he's on earth in front of him. Or maybe he was saddened by the effects of sin and a resulting curse over humanity. But Jesus felt these emotions. And so often we can feel these emotions and not understand why we're feeling them or why they're happening. We can't put it into a box and say, label it with understanding. But Jesus knows our emotions, and so we can give them to him. We don't have to bottle them up inside of ourselves, but we can tell God our worries, our cares. We can do that. We're talking to each other. We have to be a little bit careful with our emotions. You know, we don't want to upset the other person, but we can tell God. God is not going to be upset if we tell him. And Jesus says, "Where have you put him?" And they obviously make their way to the tomb. But as they're doing that, verse 35 tells us that Jesus wept. In English, it's the shortest verse in the Bible. And it's very clear what's going on. Jesus wept. He felt this emotion and he had those tears. You know, and it proves he was fully human as well as being fully God. His weeping. And Jesus cared, you know. He wasn't standing aloof, knowing all what he knows, sort of saying, never mind, never mind. He is there weeping with those who weep. And there's a bit of a lesson for us there perhaps as well. You know, Lazarus was his friend. He was going to miss him too, along with the others. And the crowd around, they were divided when they saw Jesus weeping. Some were sympathetic and say, oh, see how much he loved him. Jesus had real love for Lazarus. And now he's crying along with the rest of us. Where others are stuck in the fact, well, you know, he healed a blind man. Why didn't he heal this guy? Come and do it. You know, and so there's this division in the crowd. And I don't know how that worked out, if it was any problem or not. But here we see everybody looking at the same scene and coming to different conclusions. Now, how true is that of us today, you know? We can read the same thing, we can see the same thing, but we come to different conclusions about what's going on. Often our opinions don't align with other people's opinions. But we no need to dismiss the other people who don't agree with us. It's okay to have a different opinion. Obviously, we need to align ourselves with the Bible and get the truth of the Bible. But there are many other things we're looking at which can give that different outlook and whatever. And we see that in our world, don't we? Today is very divided. You only need to watch the news and you hear people coming at the same thing from different angles, and they're real enemies. You know, you say, how can you say this? And if you go on social media, I understand that's all crazy as well. I don't do it myself, so I don't see it. I ain't got the time. But, you know, it can be a real problem, isn't it? And whereas, you know, we shouldn't be afraid of healthy debate. We shouldn't be wanting to cancel other people's opinion just because it doesn't align with ourselves. But we should be looking for truth in the Bible. We should be thinking biblically and not worldly. Let the Bible influence our thinking and not the society influencing our thinking. And the Apostle Paul gives us good sound advice in Romans 12 verse 2. It says, don't copy the behavior and customs of this world, but let God transform you into a new person by changing the way you think. Then you will learn to know God's will for you, which is good and pleasing and perfect. You know, let God transform the way we think, and then we will know God's perfect will in our lives. You know, we need to trust Jesus to illuminate our minds for this. And so we're looking to the Bible for our information of God to transform us, of transforming the way we think. But back to Lazarus now. All the crowd of people, along with Jesus, Mary and Martha, are arriving at the tomb of Lazarus. And Jesus says, roll the stone away. Let's get on with this job we've come here to do. Martha says, hang on a minute. 4 days, hot country. It's not going to be great. Jesus says, didn't I tell you that you would see God's glory if you believe? If you believe, he's saying. You know, this is real crunch time. They know what a body will, what will happen to a body in 4 days in a hot place. They know. And they've come to this point. And are they going to believe that Jesus is going to do this miracle? There seems to be some doubt there, doesn't there? I'm sure I would be doubting if I was there. And it's come to this total crunch point. Jesus is saying, get the stone away. Let's do this. And they're kind of, are you sure, Jesus? You know, you don't want to look silly? And his disciples, Jesus had said to them, you know, Lazarus' sickness will not end in death. Were they believing? We're not told at all what they're thinking at this moment, not in this passage at least. But then Jesus prays out loud. He wants everybody to know what he's thinking and what he's doing. And Jesus prays out loud and he asks God that God would help these people to believe, because it needs God to do that, because they're obviously not doing it. You know, we don't want to go in this near this tomb. And Jesus shouted, Lazarus, come out. Now, I don't think Jesus shouted to make Lazarus hear. I think he shouted probably to make the crowd hear. He wanted them to know that Lazarus was going to come out. And I think he needed to use Lazarus's name. And so it was only just Lazarus that came out. Because these tombs often got reused. And it's possibly in a graveyard with other tombs around. You know, we didn't want all these people coming out. It was just Lazarus that Jesus wanted to raise from the dead. And so he used his name. He said, Lazarus, come on out. And Lazarus comes out. Isn't that incredible? The people were doubting, but Lazarus comes out, all wrapped up in the grave clothes. You know, I'm walking very carefully, I imagine. And Jesus says, unwrap him and let him go. I think that's a great thought. You know, unwrap him and let him go, Jesus says. Are we wrapped up in something which is constraining us, which we're not going in God's will? Do we need to be unwrapped and to fly into Jesus' will and purposes? Lazarus was unwrapped and he was alive once more. And God gave glory to Jesus through this miracle. See, earlier we remembered Jesus' blood and his body there on the cross of Calvary. But the story didn't end there. 3 days later, God raised him up from death. And people saw Jesus walking, talking, eating, just being around. And many spoke to him. And there were hundreds of witnesses to his resurrection. Jesus said, I am the resurrection and the life. Don't be surprised if I bring Lazarus back to life. I have that power. The Apostle Paul says some things about resurrection in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 20 to 23. But in fact, Christ has been raised from the dead. He is the first of a great harvest of all who have died. So you see, just as death came into the world through a man, now the resurrection from the dead has begun through another man. Just as everyone dies because we all belong to Adam, everyone who belongs to Christ will now be given new life. But there is an order to this resurrection. Christ was raised at the first of the harvest, and then all who belong to Christ will be raised when he comes back. And so Paul is talking here about the resurrection, and Jesus being the first one to be raised. And then when we who believe die, he will raise us back. He has told us he has this power. He's demonstrated he has this power. And God has raised Jesus back to life. And so we can believe. We can believe that Jesus is the resurrection and the life. We just need to believe in him. Okay, so we could just do our hand signs once more to remind us of where we're getting to in the New Testament. And to get all the way through the New Testament, we've got to do 40 of these. So we are making a little bit of progress, but there's a long way to go yet. So let's just go Greece, language, Israel, hopes, Rome, roads, birth, baptized by John, tempted by Satan, second birth, woman at the well, rejection, selection, parables, miracles, testimony of Peter, transfiguration, counting the cost, seeking the lost, Lazarus raised. Wonderful. Okay, we're going to sing a hymn in a moment, and after the hymn, we'll have a time of prayers.